There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid is on assignment in France at Le Mans. This is podcast number 353, June 12th, 2009. Steven?
This F1Weekly podcast brought to you by the Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. And of course, we thank the Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Challenge. On today's program, Le Mans invites F1 manufacturers. Renault showing signs of F1 departure. Has Max and the FIA screwed it all up? And we'll have a special interview with Gilles Van Lennep, of course, the 1971 winner of the 24 Hours of Le Mans for Porsche. So there you have it, Steve. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great and wonderful. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely wonderful. We've got Le Mans all weekend. I've got a Citroën meet to go to in beautiful Monterey, California.
Woo-hoo.
So I'll be Citroëning, I'll be Le Mansing, and it's just going to be wonderful. I'll have my hotel poolside, and I'll have my daiquiris and pink wine.
Pink wine?
Oh, yes.
I didn't know you drink pink wine.
Oh, yeah. I'll take a good rosé on a hot summer day any time of the week.
True, true. Nice white table.
Exactly.
Well iced would be good, too.
There you have it. So, it's happening. The deadline, another deadline, which is really what Formula One's all about. The looming deadline, whether the split or breakaway series will materialize, or FIA and Max Mosley we'll put the whip down and just stop this rule-changing business every other week. The cap, stop everything and let the teams do what they want to do. At least FOTA has some reasonable solutions to some of the cost cuts that the FIA and Max would like to see. So
at least they're offering solutions instead of just going, no, we're not going to take this. You know, Max is so much about do it my way or the highway, whereas FOTA's stepping out and going, you know, we don't like the whole package, but, you know, this is really all we want to change. We don't want to wholesale changes. In fact, we would prefer that there are very few changes because that's what keeps costing us so much money.
Well, not only that, but I think Max Mosley, the FIA, should work with the manufacturers behind the scenes without all this drama.
Not even just the man, with all of the teams to just kind of develop the rules and stuff. I thought that, you know, 2 years ago during the other potential breakaway period, that part of what they got was the World Motorsports Council thing where there was representation from the manufacturer or from the teams, from the FIA and from FOM, so that they could discuss and talk about rules and place stuff before everyone else to be ratified before just going off and going, hey, you can only spend $40 million.
Not only that, but they should be working together because remember, this is a spectacle for the viewers, the little people of Paris. And to sit there and have these meetings on $40 million boats and blah, blah this and blah, blah that is really ludicrous. And my favorite part is the organizers of Le Mans, the ACO, of course, the Automobile Club de l'Ouest, who runs Le Mans 24s, they have said that they're inviting the manufacturers open arms. They're saying, you know what? We will listen to you. And they've been offering all the manufacturers a chance to have their say and manipulate the rules in Le Mans to make it more exciting if you want to come in and join. They're having Le Mans is going for the week Formula One thing right here, which I think is really, really smart. And
Definitely placing themselves in a position that if Formula One does fall apart, they'll be in a position to pick up the scraps from the manufacturers. At least three of those manufacturers are people that probably already should be in Le Mans anyway.
Exactly. Toyota showing some interest. Renault, Ferrari, of course. Luca di Montezemolo will be bringing the flag down for the start of the Le Mans 24 Hours this weekend. Fernando Alonso is going to be at Le Mans this weekend. And, of course, Sebastian Bourdais, Frank Montagny driving for Peugeot. Lots of people. When you look at the list of categories of drivers at Le Mans, this is one great event to be at. And that's why Nasser Hamid
is there.
working with his F1 Weekly budget is at Le Mans this weekend. So it's going to be really, really exciting stuff. He's going to get some great interviews. And we're going to see what happens. Also, there's rumors that Montezemolo's already got a plan on the breakaway series where he's going to be running three cars, and one of those cars is going to be driven by El Hombre Muy Macho de España.
He can afford to pay him. It doesn't surprise me in the least. The way this has been going down and the fact that it's been kind of tenuous for, you know, since Max introduced his budget cap, I'm not surprised that Montezemolo didn't send a couple of his guys off to kind of flesh out a series and bring that so that he could bring it to the table at FOTA.
Not only that, but developing the Le Mans series could be exciting because the European segment, when they go to Spa, Monza, then they come to America sometimes, this could be a great series for Ferrari, Toyota, or Renault. I think this is exciting
Mercedes,
stuff.
Mercedes, BMW, you know, all of the manufacturers in Formula One could benefit from Le Mans just because you can get such a broader audience.
And there's no Max. No Bernie. If that isn't attractive.
Yeah, I think the biggest question mark for a lot of the teams is what it would cost them to pay Bernie to get out of the contract.
Well, CVC would be involved in there. And CVC is going to probably have something to say because Bernie doesn't own all of it anymore. It's been a while.
Yeah, he barely owns, I don't think, what, 25-30% or something like
barely.
That?
Barely.
If that. I'm really surprised that ultimately the FIA should be there to set rules and ensure the safety of the drivers and the viewing public. I'm not understanding why they're involved with. What's Max's issue with getting involved with the money?
Well, I know one thing. Watch Le Mans, especially if you can pick up some of the European coverage. There's going to be a lot of activity and a lot of talk about manufacturers that are in Formula One possibly going to the Le Mans and Le Mans series. ACO General Manager, Remy Brouard says, Le Mans would welcome F1 manufacturers returning to sports car racing and insist that Le Mans' governing body is open to suggestions from manufacturers on future regulations, which is really the key. Team effort for a great spectacle instead of one dominating the other or demanding or being fascistic.
Yeah, so many of the teams in Formula One now have, in a lot of them in the distant past, run cars at the 24
Absolutely.
Hours. So I can easily see a lot of them getting back into that. You know, sports cars are actually, I would think, better for selling cars because they're a lot closer to the car on the street than a Formula One car is.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's one of the key reasons Le Mans has the rules the way they do. Let's move on. Renault, Carlos Ghosn came out really knocking Bernie and the FOM, the way they handle the distribution of funds at Formula One. And Ghosn was just all over it saying, you know, we provide the spectacle, we provide the engineering, we provide the technical skills to bring Formula One to where it is. We pay the drivers and Bernie keeps most of the money. And he sounded actually quite ticked off. And also a memo went out to all their providers, their...
Their suppliers?
Yeah, their suppliers, and saying that you may want to start looking elsewhere for work because we may be out of Formula One for good pronto.
Interesting. I know that there was talk last week of Flavio possibly engineering a takeover of the Renault team, basically buying it away from Renault. I don't think he's going to get quite the deal that Ross Brawn got, but he already owns most of Mechachrome, which is more or less the engine builder for Renault and the GP2 series, so who knows? I can easily see Goshen wanting out, because if Goshen doesn't think he's getting a fair shake, he's not the type of guy who's going to stick around and get shafted.
No, he doesn't even like Formula One that much. He only looks at it as a marketing venue.
Yeah.
And
it's advertising budget, really.
Absolutely. So, and I, you know, to be honest with you, I know there was talk about Flavio Briatore purchasing Renault F1 from Renault, but, you know, I think Flavio was just talking off the cuff. When he thinks about this, he was talking about retirement last year. That a lot of us thought that this would be his last year. You've got to have a lot of energy and will, commitment, and a big long-term vision to get into a Formula One team today.
Yeah, you've really got to kind of, you know, and I'm wondering how much of, you know, Ross Brawn's success has kind of given him an idea that, you know, maybe he can do it.
Yep.
But you got to remember, too, that Ross Brawn basically got the entire Honda team for a buck.
Exactly. And not only that, but most of the development on the chassis, the double D diffuser, had already that had all been taken care of for him by Honda.
Exactly.
And Honda dollars.
It was all paid for by Honda.
Exactly. So I think Brawn GP, I mean, even though they're doing well, I think they have been sandbagging. And speaking of Brawn GP, did you enjoy that last race in Istanbul?
It was reasonably good. Could have been better. And again, it looks to me like Brawn typically is going to the track with a lot more in the bag than they actually put on the track. You know, kind of running away with it. And I'm so happy that we didn't get Bernie's medals, because otherwise the championship's already over in that regard. But I don't think that anyone's going to be able to catch Button or Brawn GP before the end of the season, unless for some reason they have a really rotten series of luck over the next, you know, four or five races that allows someone to catch back up.
I agree. Bernie Ecclestone is even already whining and complaining about the Schumacher-esque season, saying that it's boring for the spectators. A lot of people may not even watch some of the races later on in the season, because Jenson Button will have this wrapped up pretty much, maybe by Singapore.
Yeah, he could easily have it done. Probably could, if he nails all the rest of the European races, he could be done before we go back overseas.
Yeah, apparently, I mean, Red Bull is trying very, very hard to keep up with these guys, but like I said, I think they have extra power that they're sitting on, and when they need it, they pull it out.
Yeah, I think what's happened is that they're ahead on their development curve, and they're just not putting it on the car because they don't need it yet.
And I have to admit, it's become a little boring.
It would be nice if the other drivers could stay in the race a little longer.
A couple more. I'd like to see more Vettel wins.
I mean, or at least see those two neck and neck, and not watch Jensen kind of get out in the lead and stretch his lead every lap for the next 15 and then rein it back in because he's saving his car.
Not only that, but I mean, I would even go for a complete Brawn domination if we had some infighting within the team where Rubinho was seriously challenging Button and it was a tight fight for the championship between them two within the Brawn organization. But we're not even seeing that. Jensen literally is running away with this. Rubinho, you call it bad luck, bad karma, or what have you, is number two. I mean, his car failed. I can't even remember why he had to pull it into the garage. I believe it was a brake issue.
I think it was brakes, yeah.
But still, I mean, Nelson Piquet has been using the brake issue for a while. And don't get me wrong, those are legitimate issues.
He actually used that one this weekend.
But it's funny because, you know, why do these things always happen to numero dos?
Yeah, it seems odd that they would. Why is that car always the one that breaks?
Yeah, so I feel sorry for Rubinho. And to be honest with you, if Braun GP intends to dominate next year, I think they're probably going to get a different driver. I see maybe Bruno Senna finally getting a chance.
Well, yeah, I think I think part of the reason they picked up Rubinho for this season was they weren't sure of the car, they weren't sure of the budget, and they basically got Rubinho gratis.
Well, they need the experience, you know, because there was no testing time.
Yeah, and so there is that. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you. If not Bruno, it'll be someone else. You know, there are a couple of decent drivers coming up in GP2. There may be a couple of drivers who are currently on the grid who may be looking for jobs next year who have, you know, a little more experience and who apparently have talent but haven't been able to get a package yet and that kind of thing. You know, who knows? Sebastian Bourdais at Braun GP next year.
Yeah. Keep up the good work, Stephen. I'd like to talk about McLaren and how bad they are doing. And I have some theories on this, of course. And my theory is that last year, see, I think McLaren really, really benefited from Fernando Alonso's setups, technical input, and engineering thoughts on the goods, negatives.
Just his feedback general.
His feedback, I believe, is much better than what Hamilton can give to the team. That's just my personal opinion. And I think that bled into the following year.
Well, that the car didn't change significantly.
The rules hadn't changed extremely, and that feedback from Fernando setting up the car really helped the team dominate as they did with a good package. And now that with the new rules, you don't have that Fernando input. And Heikki Kovalainen,
actually, you've got two items in there that fell out. One, Ron stepped away. I don't know how big an impact that is, but leadership can make a huge difference in the output of the worker bees.
Absolutely.
And then, like you say, losing a driver of Fernando's talent who seems to be able to find the nuances. Part of the reason he's 6 tenths faster is because he can find an extra 2 or 3 tenths in the car that another driver can't.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I don't see the Renault being that much better than the McLaren. I think they're probably fairly even, but Fernando gets more out of the car.
Yeah, actually, I think the Renault is probably not as good as the McLaren, and Fernando's getting more out of it.
Yeah, which is even something I don't even want to ponder, Stephen.
Yo, we got to figure, you know, Lewis, 2 years removed from being Fernando's teammate, not to make this the Fernando show, but 2 years removed from being Fernando's teammate, has not made it out of Q3 or made it out of Q1 twice this year, where he'd never not gotten out of Q2.
Not only that, but they seem to be taking steps backwards. The last two races in a row, they did not get out of Q1. Yeah. Heikki Kovalainen.
Well, they didn't get. Part of the reason they didn't get out of Q1 in Monaco is because he had the shunt. But and poor Heikki's just kind of floundering. He really doesn't seem to have any direction. Can't seem to get anything out of the car. And when he does start to get something going, his luck just jumps up and knocks him off the track.
His cage has been rattled. He's over with. He's a number two driver for the rest of his career. I guarantee it. He'll hang on into Formula One as the Fisichellas and the Trulis retire. There'll be seats for these guys because, as we all know, all of these guys are good drivers. It just takes that extra.
Yeah, it comes down to, you know, experience. Typically, you get guys Trulli and Fisichella around because of the length of experience they have, and the more years that Heikki can get a ride, the longer his career will run.
And of course, after seeing the improvement and dedication that Felipe Massa has given Ferrari, and of course, that's been accentuated by the fact that Kimi is a sleepy kind of a guy now. I call him Casper.
Yeah,
Kimi.
But he's a little bit more into it than he was last season.
Okay, he's a little bit more into it. That's really nice.
So far.
Yeah. But still, okay, we got the podium in Monaco, but still, Kimi, I've lost all hope for Kimi. I think Massa has proven to be a bit of a better driver than Kimi Raikkonen.
He has become. I think Kimi's just kind of pulled back. He's gotten his world championship. I think he's just waiting out his contract, and I think he's going to go to Rally.
Possibly.
The way he's been doing that more and more often over the last 2 years, and, you know, he seems to be looking for the opportunities to go. You know, maybe it's his finished blood or something. He wants to drive a rally car. But I seriously think that he may be running WRC, you know, when his once his Ferrari contract runs out, and he's going to be, you know, go race for Ford or something.
It's possible, or some of the junior series, I mean, which are respectable. Because to be honest with you, I think Kimi Raikkonen just wants to do something that's fun.
Right.
And also, he's not having fun anymore.
Exactly. And I think part of it, too, comes back to, you know, he basically got in Formula One. He made a fortune, which he had to probably hand over to the people that got him into Formula One. So it's kind of like, okay, I've gotten my world championship. Maybe that got him out of that contract. And so now he's just ready to go on and do what he wants to do.
Of course. And speaking of number ones and number two, Sebastian Vettel not happy about having to stay back and let Mark Webber take the number two spot on the podium. In other words, you know, once you're in your final 10 laps, you have to think about the next race coming up because all the components on the cars these days have to last.
Two, three, four, five races, correct. Depending on the components.
So Vettel not very happy. He doesn't like that number two thing.
No, he was. I completely understand his point of view, but I also understand the team basically going reining him in so that they can save wear and tear on the car. There's still a lot of season left, and to end up losing a potential podium and or, you know, a passel of points is what they got in Turkey with Rubinho falling out. Not worth the risk, really.
Exactly, and he just needs to remember that he's racing for a racing team,
right?
And that's the whole deal. So too bad Sebastian couldn't take the second position. I think he could have caught up with Mark. And the other thing with the reserve power that I think the Browns are holding back, I don't think Mark Webber is going to get that win this year that he was hoping to get, his first win.
You know, I think he's
a career changer.
I think he still has a chance.
He has a chance.
The problem is his victory is going to be like Button's was in Hungary, where the two front runners have something go wrong and he's in the right position to pounce.
Yeah.
That's really, I think, the only way he's going to manage to get it. Somebody's going to knock Button off track at the start or something, or, you know, maybe he'll have a problem with his clutch in a race where he has a hard time off the line. And Webber's able to get out in front, and then Vettel has a hydraulic issue or something.
Exactly. Let's move on to BMW. Some people even beginning to talk about heads beginning to roll at BMW. The board is not too happy with Mario Tyson's performance this year. They were on a roll, making steps, and now they've taken a number of steps backwards, which is a legitimate problem in any kind of engineering endeavor. There's going to be some steps backwards.
Not like that, but you had kind of wholesale changes in the car, and that did not work to benefit BMW. They didn't, you know, make the right choices in the aero package to take best advantage of the issues. It's taken them a long time to get a double D out onto the track. They spent a lot of time on their KERS system, which they pretty much just tossed on the scrap heap.
And so, they were so pro KERS.
They put a lot into it. You know, they were like, weren't they the only ones who managed to shock a pitman?
There was some shocking going on.
But yeah, considering what they put into KERS to basically drop it like that, and again, my private rant on KERS is that if you're going to allow it into the cars, then there should be an advantage to having it, not a weight penalty.
Exactly. And so far, the advantage, it's minimal. And it's more frustrating watching them use KERS to stop somebody from passing you.
Yeah, it's been more of a moving roadblock advantage than
exactly.
And any kind of overtake advantage.
Thank you very much. And no KERS people or cars have won or even been on the podium. Am I wrong here? I got my stats wrong. Steve?
Did Ferrari have KERS in Monaco?
No. I don't think... Did they?
I think they did. I think they've run every... Well...
It's possible.
I thought they did.
That's possible.
Maybe
I'm
not.
Sure...
That would be the only car that I can think of off the top of my head that has been KERS equipped that has finished on...
Send me email.
Let us know. Remind us. We don't have our guru here today.
Oh, yes. He would know everything, but he is at Le Mans.
Le Mans.
So the pretty exciting stuff. Yeah, well, we're not going to have Motorsports Mondial this week.
But, we kind of did it on Sunday in the race review.
Exactly.
If you want to know what happened over the weekend, go back and listen to the race recap.
There you have it. And I couldn't be here once again due to family issues on the East Coast of the continent of the United States. But
I told everybody you were on a book tour.
Exactly. That tour. Well, the book tour, the mirror, and me. So thank you. Real quickly before we go to break, Donington Park boss Simon Gillette told Silverstone to forget its aspirations of reclaiming the British Grand Prix after confirming that he now has a 17-year contract with Bernie. A month ago, they were saying Donington is down the tubes, and now Mr. Gillette, who looks a lot like the actor, the French actor, Gérard Depardieu. I just noticed that. Now he's got a 17-year contract.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything to Bernie, because if the track isn't up to Formula One snuff come next year, Bernie's going to go, no British Grand Prix.
Of course, and I have to thank Autosport. This is exclusive through Autosport. Mr. Gillette said, Donington Park would not be ready to host the British Grand Prix in 2010 with the investment-raising debenture scheme now due to be launched next month. But apparently now, that's changed, even though they did have that safety net where it would go to Silverstone for 2010. Gillette says we are on target, and I'm happy for him, but I still, the logistics still are daunting, because we're talking about bringing everybody in basically by bus.
Yeah,
there will no be
how can Bernie signing a 17-year contract with a venue that has that kind of access when he gets all bent out of shape when it's in the countryside of France? Come on. In 17 years, Gillette needs to really read that contract, because I know there are probably at least four different escape clauses in there for Bernie if he wants to walk away.
Bernie does this because this is the glove in the BRDC's face. He likes doing that. Slapo, I challenge you. Because
I'd really like to know where, way back at some point, it must have been sometime when he was in the business,
yeah, but
as a team owner and
Brabham, maybe,
yeah, and the, you know, the BRDC basically said, "No, we didn't want you in the club," you know, and he's held it against them ever since.
No, it's one of these Hatfield and McCoy things.
Yeah.
It's hard to understand, but sure enough, Donington is on schedule, and it's now a 17-year contract. But Silverstone will get some other stuff, MotoGP, probably that breakaway series that we're going to hear about tomorrow.
Exactly. Yeah, that 17-year contract's not going to mean much when there's no Formula One.
Exactly. It's going to be Formula what? But we'll see what happens. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. I want you to stay tuned for the interview between Nasser Hamid and Gilles Van Lennep, of course, the 1971 winner of the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Great interview. And, of course, this was done at the beautiful Laguna Seca racetrack. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Nice, very nice to meet you.
Hi, Nasser.
I've known you for
30
years.
Yeah,
remember you from your Le Mans days, you know?
You remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
76.
All from Holland, right?
I'm with F1Weekly.com.
Yeah.
And we couldn't believe you were here.
Very, very nice to see you.
But we were a late entry. It's my car, you know.
You know, we do a F1 weekly podcast, and we have a few questions for you, please.
Yes, please.
You drove the 917 at Le Mans, right?
Yeah, 1971. It was Helmut Marko.
Helmut Marko. And you won that race, right?
And I won that race with a Porsche 917 5-liter, and we still hold the record.
I know.
5,335 kilometers. Yeah, I know it all. 222.3 kilometers average.
How was it driving on the Mulsanne straight, the old fast Mulsanne in that car?
Oh, marvelous, because then we had the rest. But it did 350 kilometers an hour, the short tail one, our car. The long tail was 370, we did 350. But you had one fast flat out corner, so you have to be very precise steering in the fast corner there. But there was only one corner, it was flat out. But you know, you have to do it exactly, because you go bloody fast.
Exactly.
Are you still in touch with Dr. Helmut Marko?
Not really, no.
Oh, really?
No. He spoke to me when he was 60, and I should have gone there. But, you know, he had a surprise party, but I couldn't come, I couldn't go. So we have not, that is the only thing, you know, you have not so many. I see Jackie Yakes when I drive, I drove the Mille Miglia this year with this car, with my friend Ben Pond, who has the winery here, you know, Bernardus Lodge. He's living over the great. He has a nice hotel there. And Ben is here, and that's my friend for 45 years. And I raced together with him, and he was my manager, and he was a coach, and he was everything, you know. And and we still know each other. But this car is now, we drove together in the Mille Miglia, because the sponsor, State of Art, allowed us to race this car together. But Ben was driving, and I was sitting beside, because we drive about the same, and I like it. And then the sponsor said, do you like to drive it in Monterey, in Carmel? I said, yeah, okay, well, think about it. I haven't raced for 15 years, and I did one race in 91, and then I didn't race after 76, so I'm 64 now, but I thought, yeah, I must do it, you know, I feel good.
Once a race car driver, always a
race driver. Always, exactly, always a race driver, so I did it.
What part of Holland are you from?
I'm right in the middle. It's about 20 minutes from Amsterdam to the southeast.
Oh, that's wonderful. My wife is born in Den Haag.
Den Haag?
Yeah, I married a Dutch woman.
Oh, you did?
Yes. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I did.
That's good. Very nice women in Holland.
Well, very nice.
Here too, but but it's fair in Holland too. Yes, that's right.
You know, one thing that surprises me about two countries in Europe, Holland is one of them, Austria is one of them. You know, not in big size like France or Germany, but they have a tremendous following in Formula One. Why is that?
Well, you can also say Finland.
Absolutely, they produce a few.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know. It's so funny that we had Jos Verstappen now
Jos is like a god in Holland.
Exactly, and Arie Luyendijk, of course, winning Indy 500 twice.
Twice, yeah.
So we had a few good drivers, in Holland. And why is that? I couldn't tell you, because it's so difficult to get the money in Holland.
Sure.
Therefore, my Formula One career, I finished sixth twice in the Formula One, in an old one.
Yeah, tell us about your Formula One career.
Yeah, I did only 8 races.
Uh-huh.
Because
which team?
First time it was the Surtees in 1971, a week after I won Le Mans.
Wow.
And it was paid by say, Zandvoort, the organization.
Sure.
And Esso was a sponsor. But you don't believe it. They pay, I don't know what it is, but it is 25,000 guilders. It's about $12,500, whatever, $14,000. And now you pay a couple of million dollars.
Yeah, it's nothing.
To do a drive. And I was in the wet, in the rain, and I finished 8th.
Wow.
In a TS7, and Surtees was driving a TS9. And Jackie Stewart, Graham Hill, and Denny Holm, ex-world champions, they were 9th, 10th, and 11th.
What a lineup.
But that was, I tell you, because that was the tires. I was the last one on Firestone, and they drive Goodyear, and the Firestones were better in the rain. But I did the whole race. I mean, there are no mistakes, and I passed Graham Hill, and boom, and then he said it at the night, who is that chap? Because he's never heard of me, of course. You know?
Of course not. That's fantastic.
So that was in 71.
Fantastic.
And then in 72, I didn't drive. 73, I drove maybe 3 races, 4, I can't remember, for Williams, with Isor Marlboro,
yeah.
With sponsoring of Marlboro, because I was, of course, the best in Holland at the moment. and Marlboro wanted to, I was in the world championship team for Marlboro, and they paid, and he said, you have to let drive him. For Lennep, and then, okay, Zandvoort, and you have to drive, let them drive another time, because there was six overall in Zandvoort when the big fire was, with Roger Williamson was killed.
Oh, yeah.
And then I finished six, but nobody knows because there was an accident, yeah. A deadly accident.
Let me ask.
And then I did, two other, one very bad race in Belgium, and it was ninth in Austria. But frankly, he didn't want me. You know, I didn't get the right tires, and it was a load of shit. But anyway, and then I had your end sign.
Sure. More none.
More is none. With Dutch sponsoring, so then they put me in the car again, and I finished sixth at the Nürburgring in 75.
Wow.
And then my sponsor said, you drove badly. It was the first point for Maurice Nunn. Then I said, fuck Formula 1.
I said that too.
Oh, yeah?
I said, fuck Formula 1. I want to stop racing, actually. And then the factory Porsche asked me for the second time to drive Le Mans with Jackie Hicks. I said, okay, 76, I have to do it. But then I stopped. And I won again. So on a high point, I said, bye-bye. And then I was a teacher after that, coaching the Golf GTI Cup, the Citroën Saxo Cup. 14 years I did coaching from a group of people. Yeah, the group of people.
Oh,
so
I that
was really great. And now I'm a teacher, because now I do it for Audi Quattro in Holland, 60 days advanced driving school. For Porsche, I do it in Holland. And that's my friend Ben Pon, who was the importer in Holland. Now he more or less live here with his winery. But his brother, you know, he did the business. They have Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche, Seat. You know, it's a big importer in Holland. And I work for them, for Audi and Porsche. So I still do.
You know, you mentioned the 73 Dutch Grand Prix where Roger Williamson was killed. I met Tom Wheatcroft, who was the owner of the car, last January at the Autosport show. Obviously a very tragic accident. Do you think the race should have been stopped or anything could have been done to help him out or save him?
Yeah, in the end. Yeah, that's a different story. But I think they could have done something if they let the fire truck going backwards instead of around the track, because that's bloody too late. And you know, that day they had fire extinguishers like that. Now, and after that they had about 100 kilos. So and they have every 7 seconds they can be at the point in the track. So, and then with 100 kilos you should have put it out, and then he was still alive. That's for sure. Because, but to stop the race, I don't know, because we didn't even know, because Pearly was his name.
Yeah.
He was with his fire extinguisher, and I saw him when we go through the smoke slowly in the yellow, and I saw somebody coming out. So even till the end of the race, I didn't know he was killed.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, he came out, but that was Pearly.
So you really thought
and then
this
I
was...
say shit after that, of course, yeah.
Did you really think this was Pearly's car and he was trying to put his fire out and some
no,
of the...
I didn't know that.
Okay.
In the racing, I didn't know that.
But you were not aware that there was a guy trapped inside?
No.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, you know, interviews from other drivers.
Yeah.
Nobody, because David Pearly was driving a similar car, everybody thought that driver is out and he's trying to put the fire out.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's a pretty sad scene if you watch it on TV.
Oh, it's so sad. It's unbelievable. But luckily, after that, it went better all the time with the fire rescue, with the rescue.
Zandvoort is an amazing track, a lot of history there,
yeah.
And it was designed by John Hugenholz. I understand his son is here too.
He's racing tomorrow, I think tomorrow.
Is he here? Is he here today?
He's here, definitely.
Yeah.
And he won last week, because I drove last week too, and then he won with the Ferrari from Net, whatever his name is. He won twice, yes, and he's on pole again.
Wow.
In a Ferrari, whatever, I don't know exactly what it is.
Any chance you might see Zandvoort back on the F1 circuit?
Never, ever. Because of politics. Even they could do it, if you can't reach it. Nowadays, with so many people and you have 3,000 journalists and everything, that's maybe possible, but you have no place to stay. It's too small country.
Yeah.
And if the Bernie Ecclestone is saying I need 30 helicopters, they start shouting in the government for another year, and then you are back to square one. Well, so therefore, you go to China, and you go to Malaysia, and you go to Sheikh, and the Sheikh said, oh, you want 30 helicopters? Okay, here you are.
Yeah. But the Netherlands...
It's too much democratic. I'm sorry to say that, but it's in a... It's still in... how do you call it?
But they were able to get the A1 GP.
Well, I hear, yes, but if that is still on.
And so far it's on the schedule.
Yeah, it's on the schedule. First race in Zandvoort. Yeah,
exactly.
And I heard that the tickets were sold out in 3 days.
35,000 or 80,000 sold out.
I met Jan Lemmers at the A1 GP race here.
Yeah.
And don't ask me how many tickets were sold here. It's very embarrassing. But I was asking him about you.
I asked him
about you. How is Isman Nanev doing these days? So, you know, yeah, I have a friend who was raised in Germany, and we often talk about you when you drove the car at Le Mans at high speed. And what was more fun, driving a Formula One car or a Le Mans-type car?
It's two different
beasts.
Sort of racing. Long-distance racing, you drive up to 100% sometimes, but you maybe drive 95%, and Formula One is 100% all the way. And Le Mans, of course, you go into the through the corners, I always said. Through the corners, you go 100%, because the tires you can change, but you have to, the brakes, we talk about it, do we change two times or one time? Okay, you have to brake a little earlier, then you can do one time, and otherwise you got to do two times, so many laps, so you win so many seconds. And the engine, if it's 8,200 revs, 8,200 revs, it's 8,200 revs. And the gearbox, dark nowadays is nothing to do with it because of their flipper. But we had to do the gearbox nicely, otherwise it doesn't work. But in the corners, I was very quick. You go. But there are not very many racing drivers. If they want to go fast through the corners, they start pulling the gearbox as well. And that doesn't work in Le Mans.
You know, I have a question. You know, there was a time when you were racing. I was reading that, I don't know what year it was, but 1 year, the first Formula One Grand Prix was on January 1st in South Africa. And the night before the race, Jackie Stewart and Jochen Rindt, who were main, you know, competitors, they went to a movie together, drive-in. So you come from a different era. Were you friends with some drivers with whom you still have contacts?
Actually, not. But in the time, maybe one of my best was Marco, Derek Bell, Vic Alford.
Yeah.
Well, Rolf Stommeler. But we were a very good acquaintance, a little bit more than the other. But if you say, have you really got friends there? No.
Yeah.
It's too individual.
Yeah.
No, motor racing is...
If we see each other, I was in Goodwood a couple of months ago. I see Derek and I see even Sterling Moss, I know, of course, as well, because I did the rally sometime when he was in. And you have a little talk and
yeah, it's a very
about cars and things and the wives, whatever. But no.
Do you have a son who was...
No, I'm afraid I have no children.
No son, so nobody's following
in
your footsteps?
No. I have to do it on my... Therefore, I still try again.
His car is his son.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you so much.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
And we have
thank
something
you
for you.
Great interview with Gijs van Lennep. Thank you very much, F1Weekly.com.
Gijs van Lennep, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, before we go into the wrap-up, we're going to have one email. There are no forum updates. And I challenge everybody on the forum that a lot of guys have been pitching in, doing the forum updates. But we haven't had an American do the forum updates. Steven, what's up with that?
No big deal as far as I'm concerned, but it would be nice to, you know, for somebody on this side of the pond to grab the baton and put it together one day.
At least a Canadian. That's pretty close.
Hey, just get this hemisphere. We'll take one of our South American guys.
Exactly. So there you have it. No forum updates, but of course it was Ye's birthday. And Ye, happy birthday from everyone here at F1Weekly.com. Keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work.
So Steve, go ahead and throw in an email.
It's quick email. Well, maybe Marcos could help us out. You know, he's a Brazilian living in Brussels, so we need to get both sides of the pond. It says, Mr. Giz, hi, Clark. I'm Marcos, a Brazilian-Italian F1 fan currently living in Belgium. I'm a big fan of your podcast. Sometimes you mention how good it would be to see some French F1 coverage. Well, since I moved to Belgium, I used to see the race in French TV, TF1. But this year I started watching the BBC because they don't have advertisements, and also because of Martin Brundle, of course. But I'd very much like the pre-French race interview, so I bought a TV recorder in order to see the F1 and BBC at the same time. And because of that, I uploaded a copy of this onto a website for you to watch. So keep up the good work. Thanks.
Outstanding. I love it when they like us. Because if they don't like us, we don't read them anymore.
Yeah, it should be nice to download that one and get to watch. He mentions that they're talking to your favorite dryer, Muy Macho Hombre de España. And he's speaking in French.
Huh. That's really cool. Wow, if the hombre muy macho can speak in French, that's it. It's out of control.
Well, French, Spanish, English. He probably speaks Italian.
No, of course he does when he yells at Massa.
Yeah.
Oh, those were the days. I miss those days. Anyway, thank you for emailing F1 Weekly, and we'll probably have those forum updates next week. Real quickly, I want to remind the San Francisco Formula One group, SFF1. Of course, there's no race this weekend, but check them out, sff1.com. They've got some good stuff going on, a lot of cool photographs from Paul-Henri Cayet, of course, from the Cayet Archives. Great stuff. Marin Karting is proud to organize and support the 2009 Jim Russell Northern California Rotax Series. Marin Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts. Engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact Marin Karting at 415-898-0999 or on the web at marinkarting.com. Of course, they just had their third race of the season. Keep up the good work. If you want to see the results of the outstanding driving on the Rotax Challenge, just check out the website. Then you probably find a link on marinkarting.com. We want to mention our MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter sites. Of course, everybody's tweeting on Twitter, but I've been hearing some stats that's not too good. Most Twitters have no followers and don't tweet.
So better off like me, just not having a Twitter account.
Yeah, it's just I think the Twitter thing is just going to fade. The social networking thing.
They all tend to, you know, jump up into the public eye, and yeah, they peak for about 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year, and then they start to slowly fade away. You know, whoever talks about MySpace anymore?
Nobody. So luckily, you know, that doesn't happen at F1 Weekly, but you could still go to MySpace, Facebook, and Twitter.
Woo-hoo!
To check out our F1 Weekly listeners. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info, that is I-N-F-O, at F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Thank you, and good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.